This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Oh, something else for you. The story of that student, this Mahmoud Khalil, whatever his face is in New York City, Mahmoud Khalil, is the one that they want to deport. Well, it turns out, according to Human Events, Mahmoud Khalil had a security clearance from the British government. The UK program with which Khalil was affiliated is a flagship UK soft power policy. The Middle East Eye has revealed on Wednesday that Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University master's grad who was detained by the Department of Homeland Security Saturday night, after his green card was revoked by the State Department, had security clearance from the British government. He worked, the outlet states, as a program manager at the Syria office in the British Embassy in Beirut from 2018 to 2022. Khalil worked as a local manager for the Syria Chevening Program, a prestigious UK government international scholarship scheme, as well as for the Conflict Stability and Security Fund. Came to the United States in 2023, obtained a green card, and completed graduate studies at Columbia School of International and Public Affairs in December of 2024. British diplomats said kind words for Khalil. Former diplomat Andrew Waller said that to gain his position in the UK's embassy in Beirut, he went through a vetting process to get the job and was cleared to work on sensitive issues for the British government. Waller said that the UK program with which Khalil was affiliated is a, quote, flagship UK soft power policy program. It brings the brightest students from around the world to UK universities. Mahmoud ran its Syria program and interviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of applicants on behalf of the British government. He also served as a local staff political officer and a translator both for language and context in meetings. Waller had nothing but kind words for Khalil, per MEE. That vetting process had no weight with the Trump administration, which, acting on the president's order to quell anti-Semitic protests on campus, has set about revoking visas and green cards of student activists who engage in the chaos on college campuses in the wake of the October 7th massacre. Student activists on college campuses took up the side of the Hamas terrorists who perpetrated the program, which killed 1,200 people and kidnapped over 200, more than 50 of whom are still being held by terrorists in Gaza. It is believed that many of those Hamas is holding are dead. Now, this Chevening Scholarship is a program of the Foreign, Commonwealth, and Development Office and aims to support UK foreign policy priorities and achieve objectives by creating lasting positive relationships with future leaders, influencers, and decision makers. This kid from Columbia University, who they now want to deport, was a leader and spokesperson for the violent demonstrations and occupations that took place on Columbia's campus. Students and activists occupied the Quad administration buildings and as recently as January disrupted classes to distribute anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian pamphlets. Last week, a Bernard College library was occupied and the NYPD was called in to clear the building. Trump has called his detainment a blueprint for the removal of other students in the U.S. on visas or green cards. The question, of course, becomes, is he getting deported just for his beliefs and his speech, or is he getting deported for other reasons? This report, assuming it's true, this report really changes everything in the context of kicking this kid out. Does it not? Does it not? I mean, it's just, because the U.K., the mayor, Sadiq Khan of London, for example, the UK is all in on being pro-Palestinian. So it wouldn't surprise me. And the question becomes, do they send agitators here to the United States of America? Now, I am no fan of punishing people for speech. And even on this issue, when we're dealing with people with green cards, deporting them for speech is a very, very serious slippery slope. Because you imagine in the future a President AOC or President Bernie Sanders deporting Israeli students and saying that they're engaging in advocating for genocide against the Palestinian people and blah, blah, blah. And we would be outraged if that happened. So the speech thing, you got to be very careful of. But now organizing and being part of an affiliate of groups that are dangerous to the United States of America and or its allies and or its policies is a totally different story. And by the way, even when it comes to speech, it still is legal for the United States of America to deport somebody because it doesn't like what they're standing for. That is the case. It is legal. It is legal. And is it constitutional? Probably. Has the Supreme Court fully decided on the issue? No, not yet. There's case law, though. There's precedent on the books to suggest that, yes, in fact, you can deport somebody over political beliefs. Because, you know, obviously, if the United States of America doesn't want foreigners coming here, you give them a visa, you give them a green card, and then they're working to overthrow the United States of America or advocate for our enemies. And a lot of the case law actually comes from the era of which the communist paranoia was taking over the country, where we thought everybody was a commie. And for the most part, we were probably right. But that's really where it comes from. It's the idea that, hey, we don't want people coming here to this country. And then they're advocating for the Soviet Union. They're advocating for Russia. And they're here to help with the eventual overthrow of capitalism in the West and the rise of Mother Russia. But I could also see that being used against us in the future by the left by saying that you're a Russian sympathizer. You know, if you want the war with Ukraine to end, times have changed. Now the Russian sympathizers are people like, obviously, Donald Trump for wanting the war to end. And me for wanting the war to end. Tucker Carlson, Dana Loesch, other people who want the war to come to an end, who are sick and tired of it. But the left and the media flip that script to turn around and say that you're actually now advocating for Russia. You're a Russian sympathizer. You're part of the problem. And I could see them trying to deport people in this country for those reasons, too. So you got to be really, really careful. And obviously, everybody has a constitutional right to be part of a group. We have freedom of association. And while you're in the United States on a visa or a green card, you do have constitutional rights. But that doesn't mean the government can't deport you. The question, of course, always is, should they? Or are we opening up a door here that we'll someday regret? But as more details come out about this particular student, it's very obvious that it's more than just simply his political views and his political speech. It may very well be his associations here. And it may very well be that he's part of something that is dangerous and antithetical to the United States of America's interests. The other thing, too, is I always say it's the common sense test, right? If Rosie O'Donnell is in Ireland and starts advocating for, say, the end of alcohol, which would be antithetical to Ireland's interests. I'm just kidding, sort of. I mean, kind of. But they would have every right to boot her out of there. I mean, they're probably going to wind up booting her out of there anyway. But when you're a guest in someone's country, just like if you're a guest in someone's home, you should respect the home. You should respect that country and just be a good. That's the Zioli common sense test. I mean, come on. It's like going to Italy and advocating for the Olive Garden. you know, that's antithetical to Italian food and antithetical to Italian views. So they're going to turn around. I'm just kidding. Who doesn't love a good endless salad and breadsticks? Am I right? But you got to use common sense here. You're not a citizen of the United States of America. And so, yeah, the government can boot you out. They have the right to do so. The real question, though, is should they, and are we opening up a door that someday we'll regret opening up? That's the only question that we have to think about. And then we should think about it because it is a very, very important question. No doubt about it. Here's something else to think about on this issue, all right? So Ilya Shapiro is a libertarian-minded constitutional scholar, and he's also the director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. He and Daniel DiMartino, who is a fellow over there, they're both immigrants. They wrote a piece today in the New York Post. It's the right thing to do and well within the law to get him the hell out. And here's a little bit of their piece that they wrote, because I found this fascinating. Because again, like I said to you, I'm a pro First Amendment advocate, but at the same time, I understand that this is within the law. I understand it's constitutional. I also understand that there's more to the story here than just simply the kid's speech. And yes, we have to be careful and we have to use these things carefully. But they write the following here. This is the right thing to do if we want to fix campus culture. And contrary to misinformed or disingenuous critics, it poses no First Amendment problems. Not only is Khalil Syrian, not Palestinian, the Democrats are wrong about both the principle and the application of the law. Because the Democrats are running around with free Mahmoud Khalil. They wouldn't say the name of Lake and Riley, but they can't shut up about saying Mahmoud Khalil. Presence is a privilege. Indeed, it's a basic application of U.S. immigration law, which says that people here on a visa, tourist, student, employment, or otherwise, who reveal themselves to be ineligible for that visa, quote, inadmissible in the parlance of the Immigration and Nationality Act, end quote, can have their visa revoked. Even President Joe Biden's State Department once told then-Senator Marco Rubio that it could revoke the visas of Hamas supporters. Holders of temporary visas, like students who are deemed ineligible, generally do not get a hearing or anything beyond an administrative order that cannot be challenged. Green card holders, like Khalil, on the other hand, are entitled to appear before an immigration judge who must determine that the government has met the burden of proof to make the person deportable. There is no doubt that pro-Hamas protests on college campuses across the country are detrimental to the foreign policy goals of America, which include protecting the state of Israel, one of America's closest allies, they write. In Khalil's case, we don't know the details of the due process he's been given, but one thing is clear. The executive branch has the authority to vet non-citizens based on their views, thanks to laws Congress has passed and the Supreme Court has upheld. While the relevant Immigration and Nationalization Act provisions could potentially be abused, which is, again, what I've been warning about and we have to be careful of, there's no evidence of abuse in this case so far. Rather, they're being applied selectively and in furtherance of the national interest. But that's not all Trump can do. The INA's inadmissibility provision also empowers the president to, quote, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens whom he determines to be detrimental to the interests of the United States. During Trump's first term, the Supreme Court upheld that broad grant of presidential discretion to vet, restrict, and even ban immigrants and thus to direct executive agency action in that regard at the culmination of the high-profile travel ban litigation. You remember that whole thing in the early days of the first term of the Trump administration when he said, if you're coming from these particular countries, we're not going to let you into the United States of America. And they said he has the right to do so under the Immigration and Nationalization Act. Like I've been saying, I mean, nothing about this is illegal. Nothing about this is unconstitutional. The only question is, should we do it? And we have to exercise care and caution here. And I like the idea of doing it when it's just bigger than just simply speech, but it's about actions. Because it's a very slippery slope when we get into the area of speech, as we all know. And we have to always think about what the left will do in the future. We would be foolish not to think about that, the consequences of that, given how they have weaponized just about every aspect of government. And weaponized every aspect of the Justice Department, all the rules, all the powers we gave them after 9/11 to keep us safe, all the other things. In Trump v. Hawaii, the court okayed an executive order restricting travel from various countries, with Chief Justice John Roberts affirming that the only statutory requirement is that the president find the entry of the affected aliens to be detrimental to the national interest. That's exactly what's happening now, they write. Again, this is Ilya Shapiro, director of the Constitutional Studies Program at the Manhattan Institute, and Daniel DiMartino. Both are immigrants, both are constitutional scholars, and both are libertarian-minded, pro-free speech, pro-First Amendment attorneys. In one of the first executive orders Trump signed this year, he directed federal agencies to strengthen vetting and screening of those seeking admission and those already in the country, because the United States must ensure that admitted aliens and aliens otherwise already present in the United States do not bear hostile attitudes towards its citizens, culture, government, institutions, or founding principles, and do not advocate for, aid, or support designated foreign terrorists and other threats to our national security. Finally, and this is a very important piece here, as part of his additional measures to combat anti-Semitism, the president ordered the use of all available and appropriate legal tools to prosecute, remove, or otherwise hold to account the perpetrators of unlawful anti-Semitic harassment and violence. All of this makes eminent sense. It's the government's duty to screen out visitors and migrants who would be harmful to our country, including those who reject our values or are hostile to our way of life, such as communists, Nazis, or Islamists. There's nothing objectionable or controversial about removing those who harass, intimidate, vandalize, and otherwise interfere with an educational institution's core mission. And then they conclude by saying two words, more, please. They want more of this. Now, again, as I mentioned, you've got to be careful because, like everything else, we try to be reasonable and use the law and use the Constitution. The left does not. And we have to guard against the weaponization of these things, or we'll come back to regret it down the road. But insofar as I can tell in this case, while restraint is appropriate, and yes, this kid has due process rights being a resident, permanent legal resident of the country and married to a United States citizen. He has due process rights, and we want to see those exercised. I mean, obviously we do. Clearly we do. This, by the way, is the top story of the day today, brought to you by my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VeneriaDental.com. But, you know, if the left winds up making him a cause celeb, they're going to wind up regretting it, no doubt about it. There's no doubt in my mind.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So as you know, I have three kids. Patrick is 10, my son. My daughter Claire is 8. My other daughter Reagan is 5. Also on the terror watch list. And the question that I ask, that every parent asks, is do we need a federal Department of Education? It's a very, very simple question. Is this what we need? Do we need a Department of Education? And, you know, Linda McMahon, who's got a job and her job is to put herself out of a job, which is something that I admire. I really do. She's taken a job to put herself out of a job. It's really remarkable when you think about it. But what would happen if there was no Department of Education, for example? So I sent a friend of mine a text earlier today because she had sent me a text a little while ago. And I'm going to read this to you. This is what this mom said. This is why Trump won suburban moms. Many of them didn't really even like him, but they voted for him anyway for two reasons. The MAHA movement, because, yeah, they're putting crap in Girl Scout cookies, among other things. But also, too, it's all the woke stuff in schools. So this mom, suburban mom, sends me a text a couple weeks ago. She says, "Hey, Rich, I hope you're well. I think some of this is in your wheelhouse and looking for a resource or maybe just some guidance, as I know you have talked to many, many people about this issue. But my oldest is in fifth grade. And it looks like some curriculum is in their family life class. It's going to start in the next week or so. And it is regarding gender identity and gender expression and all the other BS it encompasses. I found out through another parent who has screenshots from the nurse, so parents didn't even know about it. And now I have a meeting tomorrow with the principal. I know this eventually is a battle I will have to take, but anything you can suggest for me?" Now, what I did send her was the Department of Education right now has a form where parents can go and you can, it's called enddei.ed.gov. "Schools should be focused on learning. This is what the website says. The U.S. Department of Education is committed to ensuring all students have access to meaningful learning, free of divisive ideologies and indoctrination. This submission form is an outlet for students, parents, teachers, and the broader community to report illegal discriminatory practices at institutions of learning. The Department of Education will utilize community submissions to identify potential areas for investigation." Now, the president has already cut off funding for the state of Maine because of their stance on the transgender issue when it comes to student athletes. But I think that this is the defining issue for so many parents, not just in the suburbs, but in cities, too. In cities, too. They look at this and they think it's crazy and they just want it to stop. And a lot of these policies are driven from the federal level. Well, sure, it's easy to you get bureaucrats in Washington who work at the Department of Education. They put in woke school guidelines. Then they send them to the states. And the states are like, "Well, golly gee, there's nothing we can do about it. We have to do what the feds tell us." And that's not true, of course. But they found a way in the federal level to tie grant money to ensuring that the states follow the curriculum guidelines on the federal level. Now, that's crazy because every state's different, but they act like, "Oh, well, if we don't do that, it'll be 1950 all over again. And certain students won't learn to read and write. Reading, writing, and arithmetic won't happen." So the Education Department has cut nearly half its workforce, and they're going to shut the agency down. Harvard has announced a hiring freeze because now Harvard, which has an endowment that's I think it's like $457 trillion or something crazy like that, they're worried. Johns Hopkins sees $800 million in cuts and says it will be devastating for Maryland and beyond. But long past the pandemic, kids are still skipping school in many places. So let's think about the pandemic, because it really was 5 years ago this week when schools were shut down, but liquor stores were told they could remain open, which was helpful to parents who had to educate their kids at home, because day drinking certainly helped with that. But Jason Riley in the Wall Street Journal has a really good piece on this. Long past the pandemic, kids skip school in New York. So let's look at New York, for example, as a great indicator of this. As Andrew Cuomo tries to make his return, the Love Gov, to become the mayor of New York City, hoping that that will launch him to the White House. The city's rate of chronic absenteeism shot up from 25% of students before COVID to 35% last year. What's happening with all that? Now, former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who resigned 4 years ago after multiple women accused him of sexual misconduct, is now running for New York City mayor as the answer to the problems that he helped to create. And one of the things that he did, like so many others on the left did, was shut down schools. And the lasting damage to children is something that we still to this day have not caught up from. We still right now have not caught up to where we were. Pre-pandemic levels, particularly in math and science, where other countries around the world are just kicking our butts in this. But it's even worse than that, too, because there's a whole mental health component of this, that kids are just more addicted to screens, and kids just, they don't like going outside anymore, and all the other problems that COVID brought. It was 5 years ago, and I remember it like it was yesterday, that it was going to be a Thursday would be the last day in school, and then that would be it, and then the school shut their doors, and, you know, good luck, moms and dads, we'll send you, and it was pretty funny too earlier, not funny, but it's funny in the sense of just pure lunacy, when they would send home some, I don't know, teaching points or something, and a quick video from the teacher, which would get us through 10 minutes, I kid you not, 10 minutes. And by the 11th minute, my wife and I were looking at each other going, what do we do now? What do we got? I mean, we both have to work. Even though the kids are home, we still have to work. But it's not like we could really get childcare because nobody wants to come to the house and be around. We just had a baby. We had a newborn baby. Well, at that point, actually in March, my wife was still a few weeks away from Reagan being born. She was born April 16th. But my wife's pregnant. She's on maternity leave, just getting ready for it. We're on COVID now. The kids, Patrick and Claire, are home, and we're supposed to teach them. We don't know what the heck we're doing. But this is when parents, for the first time, opened up a lot of books and said, wait, what are you learning? What is this? And that was the beginning of parents discovering so much of the indoctrination and books that were just straight out pornography in their kids' classrooms, and learning about the indoctrination that our kids were going through. I mean, for many parents, they'd heard about this stuff anecdotally, but this was the first time that they actually cracked a book open themselves, or a computer assignment or whatever it was, and said, wait, I'm supposed to teach you that boys can be girls and girls can be boys? That's our subject? Yeah, mom and dad, that's what we're learning in health class. So then what happened after that? Parents turned around and said, oh, hell no. Then when schools gradually reopened, and depending on where you were in the country, in some places they opened up a lot sooner. So if you're listening to the show in Florida or Texas or some, well, you're lucky your schools opened a lot faster than schools in Jersey did, Philadelphia did, and New York City did. But by the time they opened, though, the kids had to come back wearing masks. There was talk of mandatory COVID shots for the kids. There was still the issue of curriculum, so parents started going to school board meetings, and they started speaking up. And for many parents, they were agitated. COVID was very stressful for a lot of people, for everybody. We had lost family members. We were scared. We were confused. As life started to get a little bit back to normal, we became angry because so much of the guidance that they put us through was completely meaningless and made up. So 6 feet social distancing, telling us that we had to get a COVID shot. It did not stop transmission despite their lies and led to a lot of side effects, particularly in healthy young men. So parents were upset. They start going to school board meetings and they start speaking out. What happens? Well, Merrick Garland, Department of Justice, and the National Association of School Boards, they send out a letter saying, you better watch it, you parents. You just might be domestic violent extremists. We might be watching you. The FBI might be in the back keeping tabs on you. Like, remember in the movies, like The Godfather, where they had the wedding, you know, and the FBI agents are walking around taking pictures of the license plates? Sonny comes out, grabs one of the cameras and throws it down and then just starts handing the guy money, you know? So the FBI used to do stuff like that, like see whose mafia cars were in the parking lot at a wedding. And then they just started watching which parents, which minivans were in the parking lot at school board meetings. People got angry, really upset, but they dialed in. They dialed into what was going on in schools, and they learned a lot of things. And then you had a whole other fact of this, too, which is they realize now that a lot of the COVID money, we're talking about trillions of dollars of money here. Well, billions, really. But billions of dollars was just left unspent. It was supposed to go to ventilation systems and making schools better for them. And the money went for nonsense. This issue would lead parents to a gigantic wake-up call. Gigantic wake-up call. All right? And then here's the other thing that happened too. Parents started sending their kids to college. Colleges were locked down too, and many colleges had vaccine requirements. And then the kids got to colleges, and then their little girl, who worked so hard to get on the swim team, wound up losing to a dude in a women's swim competition. And then, you know, the young girl would call home to her parents and say, yeah, you know, we're really excited. We're going to, for the first time now, the team's going on a trip. We're going to go play another school. Great. Yeah, but I got to share a room with a guy. What? Well, it's a transgender woman, but wait, back up a second. Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, she? Well, I mean, technically it's a guy, but a sorority house winds up having to accept a biological male in their sorority house because their national chapter said, you got to take this transgender girl. And all the sorority sisters turned around and sued. Parents woke up and said, what is going on in this country right now? And they looked at the left, and the left was all in doubling down on this issue of biological males playing in sports, being in the locker rooms, sharing rooms with girls. So all of these things just brought the fever pitch up to a 10. And then you turn around and you find out how powerful organizations like the National Education Association, led by that little troll under the bridge, Randy Weingarten, the American Federation of Teachers, all these other groups, you wind up realizing how incredibly powerful they were with the CDC, and they were writing the school reopening guidance. And you hear stories about how much money they give to Democrat politicians. And you turn around and you go, I don't understand. So you start bringing up lots of different things. You say, hey, not for nothing, but what if my kid wants to go to a different school? And they say, nope, can't do that. So the Democrats start fighting against school choice. Donald Trump comes along and says, we're going to support school choice, and we're going to shut down the Federal Department of Education, which really is the epicenter of so much of the nonsense that occurred. Because the Department of Education, working with the CDC and the teachers union on the school reopening guidance and mask mandates and so much of this woke curriculum. And then these suburban moms and dads turned around and voted for him. For a lot of them, they hated him. They really did. They voted against him in 2020. But COVID and schools and the transgender issue in sports, the unhealthy foods, the MAHA movement, the vaccines, not that they're anti-vax, but they have a lot of questions about things. And certainly the COVID vaccine, when it came to their kids, led parents to wake up in big, big, big numbers. So Trump gets elected largely because of this group, and he makes good on the promise and signs directives to schools saying, you better cut the crap when it comes to this DEI stuff. You better knock it off with the transgender sports stuff, all right? And there's only two genders, male and female, period. That's it. And by the way, we're going to shut down the Department of Education. And while it takes an act of Congress to do so, there's a lot the president can do. The president of the United States can do a lot on the issue. And particularly what he can do is he can start the process by which Congress can shut it down or make it so incredibly ineffective that really its presence doesn't bother any of us because it's just so meaningless. And all it really does is redistribute wealth. That's all the Department of Education really does. But truly, it would be a symbolic win of the utmost kind to finally shut its doors. And Linda McMahon will body slam that place out of existence. She's made her money off World Wrestling Entertainment. I helped provide some of that money to her. Growing up, I loved wrestling. And she's got plenty of cash, so she doesn't have to worry about it. I'll tell you one thing. She goes in there and does her job, which is to put herself out of a job. It's going to make a lot of parents very, very happy.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm an American soldier.
Yes, and on next Friday, our annual Travis Manning Foundation Radiothon. I hope you'll join us for that. We do it every year, and it's a great, great day. It's a great celebration. Here to talk about it with me, this and other things, my friend, Gold Star sister, and the president of the Travis Manning Foundation, Ryan Manning, also host of a killer podcast. We'll talk about it in just a moment. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Listen, you caught me off guard with the Zoom, so apologies for coming on in the car, but I'm happy to join you here.
You have a face for television. We can't just isolate you to the airwaves. Okay. Sorry, but that's not how it works.
I'll take it.
Well, you're always working out like a Spartan, so, you know, I mean, come on.
Listen, you know, we're getting ready. We've got a big workout coming up with the Travis Manning Foundation, the Manning Wad, so it's like a killer workout, and I got to train for it every year, so I try to put some videos up to get people pumped up and ready for it.
I like it. I like it. That's the way it's got to go. That's good. So we have our radiothon next Friday. We're very, very excited about it. We'll be hanging out all day, and it's going to be a great day like it always is. And how are our veterans doing right now in America? It's a question I get asked all the time.
You know, I think if I could say honestly, I think there's definitely a little bit of what's the right word? You know, people are definitely feeling uneasy because there are a ton of changes. I actually see it for my daughter as a midshipman at the Naval Academy. You know, she's talking to me about all new executive orders that are coming down and regulations. And I see it as like coming back to center on the things that we should be doing with our military. But I think in some ways, things have gotten kind of lax, you know? And so people are like, wait, what's happening? And Maggie's, you know, my daughter's like, yeah, we're going to have uniform inspections every week. I'm like, yeah, so keep your uniform clean. But like, they're not used to some of these things, you know? So, you know, you see it on the left, and the left is like hysterical about everything going on. But I see it as just kind of coming back to center and resetting what our military is about to be, you know, the number one fighting force in the world. And that's good. What we should all want.
Absolutely, we should want that. And I think it's amazing that your daughter is at the Naval Academy. I really do. That is remarkable. Following in her uncle Travis's footsteps. I mean, that's you got that would make you so proud when she wanted to do that. And then when she got in.
Yeah, it's I could not be more proud or in awe of her, because it's something I certainly couldn't do. And, you know, to see her as an 18-year-old, like, going through it, it's, and to see all these kids that sign up and do this, it's truly, it renews my sense of pride and patriotism for this country when I see these young kids stepping forward every day.
Ryan Manning, the numbers are up, recruitment numbers are up since President Trump's taken office and Pete Hegseth has got in there as defense secretary. And his ethos of being, you know, a warrior ethos and a mindset of the Pentagon existing for the warriors and not bogging them down in endless wars, but making sure that if we have to fight one, we can win one, and putting our warriors first and foremost. These are all great things that should inspire people to want to serve our country. And everybody should be proud of that fact that young people say, I'd love to wear the uniform and serve my country.
Yeah, and I think that's something that has over the years been kind of stripped away, this idea that there's something, you know, adverse about joining the military. You know, I certainly have never felt that. The community within the Travis Manning Foundation hasn't felt that. But, you know, I think where we are today is like I said, like bringing it back to what the military represents to this country. And it's less than 1% of the population. And if you look at this idea that recruitment numbers have been down, the only service branch that's been meeting its recruitment numbers over the past few years is the Marine Corps. And so you have to look at that and say, why is that? Why does this exist? You know? And I think at the end of the day, it was because there was just a lot of confusion around what our military represented to this country. And I think when you bring it back, like Pete said, bring it back to the basics, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's go. And the families in the Midwest with the 18-year-old kid, it becomes okay for their son to sign up and go and join the military. Where before they were wondering like, is this where I want to send my son, you know, or daughter?
Yeah, and you know, I remember when we had the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which was an absolute disaster. I remember you and I were on the phone during that. You were working to get people out of Afghanistan. You were doing so much work on that. I think after that, there was this real period of just, I mean, morale plummeted. People didn't want to sign up. There was a real sense of we were supposed to be the best in the world here, and this happened. And am I wrong to think that was a real problem for our military?
Oh my gosh! I mean, on both sides of the aisle, I think everyone was aligned that it was probably the most colossal military failure of my lifetime, and to see what happened was just such a failure from the administration to the State Department. And, you know, yeah, and there was a kind of like, what are we sending our sons and daughters off to do? You know, and who's in charge here, frankly? Yeah. And, you know, I think, again, with Pete, you know, I've had Pete on my podcast. I've challenged Pete. Pete, when he brought his book out, War on Warriors, there were some lines in there that I didn't agree with around women in combat roles, as my daughter had just gone off into the military. And in fact, there was one line in his book where I challenged him on that line because it was specifically about women in the military. And I challenged him on it, and he said it was not meant to be read that way. And I promise in the second edition, I'm going to edit this line. And so I felt a lot better about that conversation with him. And I urged everyone who was up in arms about him getting, you know, being up for defense secretary to go and listen to my interview with him, because I said, I think you're going to hear, you know, it's one thing to see things written in a book, but go and listen to that, because yeah, at the end of the day, he just wants like a fighting force to protect each and every one of us, you know?
Yeah, and not deal with climate change, because that's not the military's job to deal with climate change. I was glad he came out and said that the other day, too. Like, that's not why we're here, okay?
And, you know, I think, again, this post-9/11 generation, what a lot of people don't understand is, like, you know, I call them celeb vets, right? So there's a lot of post-9/11 veterans who have like kind of risen to celebrity status. And Pete was one of them with, you know, doing Fox and Friends for many years. And the way they come at each other, the celeb vets on the left and the celeb vets on the right, I mean, all they exist to do is take each other down. And mm-hmm. It's so cutthroat, and it's so contrary to what they should be exhibiting in this moment. And in this time, and I hated nothing more than seeing all these post 9/11 veterans coming out against Pete in such a crazy way. Really, because again, they just didn't align with his politics, not celebrating and recognizing, hey, it's one of us. It's one of us that, you know, served in Afghanistan, served in Iraq, that's going to get in there and, you know, understands this generation of leaders, you know, and this generation of service members.
Yeah, well said. Ryan Mannion is with me, Travis Mannion Foundation, our big radiothon next Friday. Ryan's also the host of the Resilient Life podcast, which I definitely recommend you subscribe to. And she's had some amazing guests on her podcast as well. Jack Carr has been on your podcast. By the way, I love that guy. He's killing it. And it was really, really cool the other day to see Tulsi Gabbard wearing the Jack Carr hat, of which I have one somewhere. Yeah. And then Tulsi wearing that. And then he posted it to Instagram. She posted it to Instagram. I was like, that's so freaking cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love just that connection. I actually was just on Jack's podcast last week. He interviewed me. So he flipped the table on things, and that was fun. And, you know, along with the Resilient Life, I just launched a podcast with Barstool as well.
Congratulations. Bold. That is amazing. Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah. So it's called Bold American. It's with two West Point graduates. And, you know, it's about, you know, we talk about all things military and just everything that is important to Americans, you know. So definitely would love for people to check it out.
Oh, absolutely. Now, are you and Portnoy going to go out there and rate pizza together?
I mean, I'd love to do a pizza review. He actually was at our gala this year and left and drove down to the Army-Navy game and stopped in Delaware at a pizza spot. And a bunch of people sent it to me because he was, you know, he said, I'm just coming from the Travis Mannion Foundation Gala. And I had to stop somewhere and do a pizza review. But I got to think of a good place to go with them. So,
yeah. Because, I mean, it can change the lives of that pizzeria. But it could also hurt them in a negative way. But you know what I say? Let the pizza speak for itself. That's the way I say it, Ryan. You know what I mean? Let the pizza speak for itself. If it's good, it will rise. If not, you know, not so much. That's how I look at it. Yes. That's my feeling on this. Radiothon next week. It's a very, very important day for the Travis Manning Foundation. The Talk Radio 1210 WPHD audience steps up every year and does so much to help out. We're very, very proud of this partnership we have with TMF. Very proud of our friendship with you and everybody else who's there. So what can we look forward to next Friday when we do our Radiothon?
Well, I mean, we look forward to a whole day of you talking for 12 hours. What could be more fun than that? You know, I mean, that's what's always fun for me to see you in the morning looking so fresh and alive and full of energy. And then to see you right when that 7 o'clock hits and just like you grabbing that beer and you looking like you just like walked through a tornado for 5 hours, you know, so. I mean, I think that's what you look forward to. But
I think I did have a breakdown at 6:58 p.m. last year.
You did.
I think you in fact did. Yeah. Well, it's because your adrenaline is so high all day long, and then all of a sudden it's just like boom. So your whole body just reacts to it, you know. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, we're so grateful to Odyssey and 1210 and most especially your listeners who, like you said, show up in such a huge way every year, getting us over that $100,000 mark and, you know, raising funds that go back to support our military community, veterans and families of the fallen. And so just so grateful for the Zeoli Army and how they show up each and every year on that day.
Yeah, they really do, and it's always an honor to do that. And you know, we'll do dinner again with some listeners who help out and step up big time. And God only knows what medical issue I'll be going through then. But hopefully, you know, we won't have to put it off. I mean, that's amazing. Is that I had to reschedule it for shingles. Then I wound up getting a staph infection in my foot. I may want to just do dinner in like a secluded bubble, so that this way there's no chance of. But we're looking forward to doing that again. And maybe we could even have some people come in for a Ryan Mannion podcast taping exclusive or something like that. That could be a pretty cool
thing. That could actually be cool. Maybe for the Barstool podcast, that could be cool, like, you know, yeah, that's it. Listen, bold American. There's nothing bolder than coming out and supporting our military and calling into the show. That could be a good item. I think back to some of our guests. I know Pete's called in before. Tulsi calls in every year. I'm like, gosh, we've got all these cabinet members that show up for us every year. You know, Jack Carr's calling in. So we might have a special guest in studio. I'm working on that right now that I think people will be excited for. So it's a fun day.
Good. Excellent. Well, go to Barstool Sports and sign up and get the Bold American Pod. Subscribe where you get your podcasts and also the Resilient Life Podcast, Ryan Mannion. I look forward to hanging out with you next Friday, my friend. It's always a blast. It's always a great day. And all the wonderful people from the Travis Mannion Foundation, your incredible team, the volunteers who help out that day. So many Gold Star families are involved, too. It really is a day that makes us all proud. So we're looking forward to that next week. Thank you for quickly adjusting to our Zoom. That's what I love about you. You're a multimedia rock star. You just go with it.
There you go. Listen, I'm in my getting ready to walk out and go watch my daughter play some lacrosse. So what better way to end a Wednesday? So thank you so much, Rich. I'm looking forward to next week.
All right, Ryan. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the Zeoli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.